This is the Happiness Quotient. Greetings to you all. This is a special edition of the HQ. In April, I had the honor of doing an Instagram live event with my old friend Renan Ozturk to talk about Everest, creativity, filmmaking, and nutrition in the mountains. Go figure. I mean, we're talking about a guy who used to sustain on candy bars, ramen, and coffee at altitude. That's me. The event was hosted by one of our 2019 Sandy Irvin Search Expedition sponsors, Good to Go Foods, the ultimate in dehydrated backpacking food. We love you, Good to Go. This is a great conversation with Renan. I call him a modern-day Renaissance man. The only major snafu, which I've edited out for this episode, is that we had it all rehearsed the day before, and I logged on from my computer to go live at precisely the time, and I realized that I needed to log in on my telephone. It took me about 9 minutes, actually, to get there. Renan was scrambling, wondering where the hell I was. I finally made it, and what follows is the best part of the interview. I edited out some of the scrambling on Renan's part. Good times on Instagram Live, growing pains. Here is the interview on the Good to Go Foods Instagram account from April 27th, 2021 with Renan Ozturk. The happiness
done. This is going to work. There he is.
Oh my gosh, dude. Yeah, Instagram Live. You can, you know, I can do Rubik's Cubes and things like that, but you try to get on an Instagram Live, heavens to Betsy. Great seeing you.
Nice. How's it going, Tom? Tom's an old friend. He's in, you're in Jackson, New Hampshire, in the White Mountains.
Yep, in the White Mountains in New Hampshire. Lovely. Nice. Mount Washington Valley, which drew me here probably 32 years ago, and my heart and soul have been here ever since, even though it's good to be able to travel. I think as much as I love the mountains here, as you know, man, you can fall in love with where you live, but there's always that pull of the mountains far and away. So, but yeah, good to see you.
I feel like I should be interviewing you. Tom's an old school legend of the climbing community, and he was with us as the main ideator on the Everest trip a few years ago, and he was the last person to see Mallory's body when Conrad and Jake found it on the north side of Everest. So looking into a 60-year-old corpse
was that? He had been there for 75 years. So when we discovered the body, he had been missing for 75 years. Let me just try to get my phone in a cozy little spot. Yeah, he had been, George Mallory and Sandy Irvin went on a summit attempt on June 8th in 1924. And that's a long time ago to be over 28,000 feet. That was before most people thought it was possible to even get to that height without dying. And they disappeared, last seen actually headed in the direction of the summit, which is pretty amazing, and that they were that high. But after they went into the clouds, that was it. They were gone. And so, you know, for many, many years, people wondered, not only people who are fans of mountain climbing and things like that, but family. You know, he left three children behind. Sandy Irvin's parents were obviously heartbroken. And 75 years later, there we were with a public broadcasting crew and a BBC crew. And on the first day of searching, May 1st, 1999, Conrad, rebel without a cause, if you will, goes out of the search area. He's like, you know, so he kind of ventures out following, I guess, a little bit of gut and sits down to take a look around. And there, not too far off, was George Mallory. And so it's all about the realm of human possibility. Like, How far can an individual go when he or she truly sets, you know, their heart and soul into a task? And, you know, Renan yourself, who was a person who, you know, kind of, you know, always knew about Everest, right? But you set your heart and soul on other things, you know, maybe more vertical or on mountains that nobody even knows the names of, you know, until you went there. Nobody knew what Meru was. I did because I had been there before. But then, you know, Mark Sinnott gives you a ping and he's like, hey, Pollard thinks he knows where Sandy Irvin is. And suddenly you're interested and, all hell broke loose, dude, when you got onto the team that, you know, suddenly Mark and I were like, we'll go, we'll pay our own way. We'll do a, you know, grassroots climbing expedition. And then you got involved and it was like, hey, if we're going to do this, let's do a film. Let's get real financing. Let's do this right. And, you know, as a little bit of a backstory, not long before that, somebody had gone missing on Broad Peak, which is one of the 8,000-meter peaks near K2, and a drone operator, the brother of the guy who disappeared, took a drone and flew it darn near up to the summit of Broad Peak and found his brother still alive, and they were able to rescue him because of the drone. And so suddenly, instead of going to Mount Everest and putting our boots on the ground, which it sounds all well and good, but you put your boots on the ground, you're risking life and limb. You know, Everest is easy, right? We've all heard it. You're clipped into a rope. It's a walk up. You know, we'll leave the altitude for the nutrition part when we talk about that in a few minutes. But when you're off rope, even though it's like, you know, maybe 40 or 45 degrees, if you slip and fall, you just keep going. It's over. It's if you were on a roof and at a 10-foot drop, big deal. But it's every step is life and death. So if we could get a drone up there, and this is Renan's, you know, the force of your character, if we can figure out how to get drones up there, we can do vast amounts of searching that no human beings could ever do in years. And so that's what we set about to do, to get up there and use the drones. And, you know, Renan, it was just absolutely brilliant what you did. And the images that we spent most of our time searching, you know, from the comfort of a little hotel in Tibet, looking at pictures and blowing them up and looking for evidence of Mallory or Irvin. Pretty amazing, like a real remarkable, you know, it's the first of its kind of expedition. And, you know, Mark and I would have gone and had a great time. But without you, my man, like, you really made the difference. You put us on the map in a big way.
No, it's a big team effort on a trip like that. It comes down to a lot of details. Yeah, this is just a general chat about creativity and high altitude nutrition and our trip to Choma Longma, which is the native indigenous Tibetan name for Everest. And Tom was a key part of that trip. And yeah, so we're just chatting about that. We, like Tom was saying, we use drones to search. I didn't really do anything too crazy. it's just hard to operate in general up there, and putting yourself in the position with a camera or a drone that even has battery life, and if you feel good enough to even like sit up and press the button, felt like a big accomplishment. And it was pretty wild. Those things flew basically stock out of the manufacturer. We just got a special permission to unlock the altitude and hacked the descent speed so we could get them down faster. But it was exciting to have something that we had dreamed about and you and Mark had thought about actually come to life. And
Well, That might make a good segue to talk about altitude nutrition, because operating a drone at a altitude is almost impossible, but the idea of operating a human body is another thing. And so we were fortunate enough to have good to go foods with us, and that was you know, that was through Renan, really, like a contact of yours, even though good to go foods is, you know, kind of a stone's throw from where I live at their home base. But it made a lot of difference, because probably one of the biggest challenges on a climbing expedition is staying healthy and motivated, you know. And one of the things that goes away at altitude is a good appetite, or the desire to, you know, even drink, you know, water. And so, you know, with a partner like Good to Go Foods, they were able to supply us with good high altitude fare. And admittedly, my favorite high altitude food until 2019 was Snickers bars and ramen, because and coffee, of course. You know, I mean, I'm a big coffee guy, and I know you're not supposed to drink coffee at altitude, but this was kind of a game changer for us. And do you feel that way as well? I mean, we really had some good food up high.
Yeah, no, it's hard to eat anything in the way that I describe a lot of those trips to people. Is that as soon as you arrive at base camp, your body starts to die, and the hourglass is ticking, because you're at 18,000 mm-hmm. feet and you start to decline. And it's this careful balance of how you manage your energy. If you start chasing yaks too hard, try to get beauty shots in base camp down low, you might not ever make it up high. And mm-hmm. yeah, the food is pretty important. You can't really digest much, and everything makes you feel nauseous. So yeah, I've never had a problem with the good to go. So I just kept that, because our buddy Freddie first connected me with Justin and the team over there, and we've had him on family backpacking trips and the Ruth Gorge lower altitude expeditions, all kinds of like lightweight trips. But this was, that was my first time at altitude. And yeah, it just goes to show that like it's simple is best. You read the ingredients on there, and there's no yellow 7 or green 5. It's just carrots, peas, and things that you've heard of before. But yeah, I think we had all their problems in terms of, I mean, if you've seen some of the media coming out, and Red Mark's book, The Third Pole, that just came out, it goes really deep into all this and the issues that we were facing. But we were battling even to melt water for the food that we did have, and mm-hmm. as we started to get. Yeah, Todd, Taylor's dad. Yeah, we had good to go in the Wind Rivers with Todd. But yeah, we were barely eating anything up high. So to be honest, like a lot of us didn't eat anything on the final 40 hour summit push. And then as you come down, you start to eat things that your body can deal with. I really love the granola of the good to go, which is like, you don't even have to put hot water or anything into it. You can eat it as it is, and it's packaged. And we had good to go in the jungle for this last Tapui expedition, again with Mark and Honnold and Taylor. And that was a trip where all food just rots and is destroyed in a few days if it's not packed really, really like sealed, like these guys. And it's always a matter of space and weight. And that's another thing with altitude, is everything has to be light, hence the mm-hmm. the dehydrated nature of it. But
Yeah,
yeah.
calorie rich, low salt. You know, like I'd said ramen earlier, ramen is like eating, like pouring salt into your mouth, and it has that brothy taste, in which I liked. So it was kind of like drinking your food. But it was good, nutritious food in it. And as you said, when you're on a summit push, like eating is, it's secondary. You don't really need to eat to survive up there, but a little bit of hydration and laying the groundwork for that summit push is critical. And that all happens at what you eat, you know, kind of at the first high camp, and then as you
As you
move
move
your
your
way
way up.
up.
I from Corey Richards, I got the tip to put the Camel Black, your water bladder. I think I actually had an MSR inside the suit, and I had the hose. Everything was inside, and I was sipping off that. It did eventually freeze, but that was kind of a little secret weapon to get a tiny bit of hydration in. Just because, yeah, I know Mark didn't eat much. He was having some issues. And yeah, you just kind of do what you can, but
Well, it's also really simple, and you know, obviously, you know, Good to Go kind of got us started today, and I want to send them all the love that they deserve. One of the best parts at altitude, the last thing you want to do is toil away at a cook stove. I mean, it's one, you don't want to go outside of your tent even, and if you're cooking, there's the fumes from your stove, so you just pour water into it. Boiling water, and that hits the spot, so it makes it really easy. And that's it. It's like you don't want to take your hands or your toes out of a sleeping bag. Well, you do because you're the drone master, right? So you'd be sitting and we'd be resting quietly on the North Col, and all of a sudden I'd hear vroom, and the drone lights up, and everybody's like, "Oh, there goes Renan again." Vroom, and off you'd go, and everybody'd kind of run out and watch what you were filming on the drone. And so, dude, you are a man with limitless energy. I honestly think that there is something not human about your ability to just wake up 24/7, get up out of your tent, whether it's checking a time-lapse camera or getting another drone shot, or it really does boggle the mind, because I think sometimes once time, you know, people get in their tent warm and toasty, it's really tough to extract yourself from it. But I think it for my knowing you the way I do, which isn't extensively, we met maybe 10 years ago up in Jackson with Freddie, and you have this burning desire to create, and you are just feeding this voracious appetite to just try to get one better shot or another shot that maybe you've never seen before. And I love that, and I'm inspired by it. And you know, is there words to it, or have you ever tried to articulate what that is in you that drives you to create all the time?
Oof, yeah, throwing out the big questions. No, I don't know. I think it's just a lot of it comes from just the privilege to be in those places, and you know how special it is, and you know how limited your time is, just in general on this earth. So you just want to go really hard, and I think we're living at this incredible inflection point of technology, where it's smaller and you can get it into a lot of those places. And especially after this last year, like people are listening to the right kind of stories, and we're just trying to, yeah, like really make the most of it. And yeah, sometimes it does get stressful with all those different tools and opportunities and things.
I think the first shot of our of that Everest expedition, at least, and I know that it happens on the other ones as well, is just the amount of gear that you take to the airport. And you don't have to have all that gear to be creative, but it sure doesn't hurt when you want to make pictures that are going to knock people's socks off. And Renan, you've been since 2019. You've been on some remarkable expeditions to the Arctic, down to Guyana, to the jungle, and is there something you're after? You know, like I mean that kind of truly, like what is it you want to discover on these expeditions, and other than making beautiful pictures? And I think I kind of know the answer, because I know you love to connect with individuals and people, but and the land and the environment. But what are you trying to share with the world? Like if somebody couldn't see your work, what is it you're trying to do for give back to us or to the planet?
I mean, it used to be more of just showing these environments in a way that people haven't seen before, but obviously there's a bigger goal these days in like conservation and social justice, and those are like huge, crazy topics. But I think the more you can boil it down to individual connection and bring all these art forms and people together on a film project like we had on Everest, where you're tying things in on a really personal level, then it might make people turn their heads in a different way, rather than just a news headline. And again, sometimes those pieces of media like cut through the fat of everything else and do make a difference. So I think that's part of it. And sometimes it's worth waiting 10 to 20 years for a single project to come to life. Like the project that you're also a part of, the Sanctity of Space, which is tying the story of Brad Washburn, one of the greatest mountain aerial photographers and explorers to ever live. That's connecting on like a deep personal level with the subject and letting it come to fruition over many years. And sometimes those things never happen, but you're fighting for them in the background and trying to make it work day by day with all the other opportunities that come through. And it's just been really fun to collaborate with so many different people, because I would love to do more painting and artwork for myself personally. It's like really it's relaxing and nice, but now I've gotten into this video world and film stuff. Honestly, it's stressful, and I feel like it's just like killing me slowly, but it's also like inspiring, and I have like a lot of energy for it to hopefully like apply all of this, like these little bits of like technology that we can get our hands on to these stories now that are beyond climbing, put it in the hands of people and the voices of people that need to be amplified. And I know that's said a lot, but it's true for us.
Yeah. You know, you actually said something in there that's really heavy. You said, you know, like kind of you're so busy and trying to get it all in that it's slowly kind of killing you, right? I think sometimes there's a literal sense to that, but you have this unique ability to have an idea and make it become reality. I mean, one just needs to look at that, the painting on the back wall behind you, to see that you were seated in front of, I believe that's the Trango group that in Pakistan behind you. You looked at it and made it happen. It's a different kind of medium there, because you're just relaxing and painting and there's no hours of the day. But it's almost like, you know, that some people are kind of chosen, like you have these abilities and you're like, well, I'm going to hang on for the ride, and I'm going to try to get every single thing out of it that I possibly can. And then let's hope, but when, you know, you're a young man now, let's hope by the time you're, you know, 60, let's say, you'd be like, all right, I'm pulling back. Well, let's, you need to make it to 60. So you need to have a painting expedition, but it's like, you are a voice for people, for the concerns of people, for the environment, for cultures. And I would never want to place that on you and say, well, if you don't do it, you're not doing your job, because you, your job is to stay healthy. You have a beautiful wife and family, extended family, and a lot of people who care about you. But you have these ideas, and it's like, I can come almost picture like seeing your brain working while you sleep, like just these dreams churning things out, and you wake up and okay, dreams will become reality now. Boom. And there's not enough. Brad Washburn used to say, there are not enough hours in the day to do the things that I want to do. And Brad lived till he was 96, and that ain't bad.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, if you haven't seen Brad Washburn's work, just look it up, and hopefully our film that's coming out sometime, it's done, that Sanctity Space film. It's just slowed down release with COVID, because we always thought it would be a theatrical thing, and theaters are all down. But yeah, I'm still I'm still up until, you know, midnight, 1 a.m. almost every night, like working, like pressing the buttons. And I think that although I've been in some horrific accidents, and I push myself to the brink on expeditions, what a lot of people don't see is, and it's probably the same for you, is when you're, how hard you push yourself when you're home and behind the computers, like climbing the pixel mountain, so to speak. And right. That's what really kills you. Not slowly, but quickly. It destroys your body, like that much editing. But it's also like really important to take that time to really go through the data. It's kind of like shooting a Nat Geo expedition and being your own editor. When you deliver stills to Nat Geo, they even like a misfire when you shoot the ground, you have to deliver every single raw image that you shot. And that's really a naked feeling, but when you get back and you really spend the time to look through it, that's where you discover beauty in the unexpected. And if I had an overall motto, and that's like come out of the woodwork, I think that's it. Because if you stay curious and you're always looking for unexpected beauty, then that's what keeps you going and keeps you curious and makes it so you don't just give up, whether it's in the field when you're hypoxic on Everest or sitting in front of the computer screen and it's just crashed 4 different times and all you're trying to do is process a time lapse.
So as we kind of turn, that was beautiful, thank you. So as we kind of turn the corner a little bit, and don't want to keep people too long. Do you have any exciting projects that we should keep our eyes open, or anything planned that you can share to let people know what you might be embarking upon soon?
I mean, definitely the Sanctity of Space, which if you guys don't know, Tom was like one of Brad Washburn's proteges, and they had a tight relationship, and a lot of Tom's footage is in this feature doc that's coming out. And it feels so old now because we've been working on it for over 10 years, but that'll eventually drop. But Taylor and I just looked at our list, and we literally have 14 different docs in development, and almost none of them have to do with climbing. They're all mainly conservation and social justice type films. Even though I am supposed to go with my friend John Griffith, who's like become this master of virtual reality VR shooting, and Honnold, to go and do some. Honnold wants to, push the limits with soloing even more somehow,
Huh,
and
go figure.
capture that in like VR. But yeah, that'll be fun. We're gonna be in like the high Alps shooting VR later this summer, and that'll be just like kind of back to the climbing roots, and it's always full on climbing with HODL in those environments, and like puts me back on my toes and makes me train hard and fear for my life and all that good stuff. Keeps you human. But Ben Ayers as well. He's out in the Dolpo region in Nepal right now. And we've been pitching the snow leopard conservation project. I was talking about it earlier, but definitely excited about that. We just finished like this full pitch teaser for that, which is a
Nice.
big effort in like, decks and budgets, and we're trying to get that off the ground. But lots of stuff in there, and we're building a studio.
So, 'cause you don't have enough to do, right? But that will be you'll have an official home base. Hey, Renan, there's a question here. Kate asks, what's the best way to get involved in producing climate change films?
I'm lucky because like Taylor's been, she has her master's degree in this kind of stuff, has been studying it forever, and I kind of use her as a point of reference as to what to get involved in and what not to get involved in. But I think I would give the same advice as I would give to anyone when they're asking like, how do I find a story, this and that? And what I normally say is that just look close to home, and things that you might not expect. It's what you have the most intimate emotional access to. Sometimes it's within your own family, and that's the story that's really gonna be heartfelt, and that kind of honesty comes out on screen. You can't just have a fancy camera anymore. And with climate change, it's the same kind of thing where you're looking for your personal connection to it, or something that's close to home for you, that you have an inside track on, and you're taking this massive issue in world of storytelling and distilling it down to something really intimate and emotional, because taking on the big picture is really hard, and you gotta sometimes find your lane. We're not always great at that. We're not like we were really inspired by like friends like Paul and Christina Nicklin, and a lot of people who have developed their nonprofits and their organizations that tackle specific issues, and we're trending towards doing that in the desert Southwest and some of these native communities. But overall, we're more generalists, and maybe we need to take my own advice on that too. But
Yeah, I think sometimes we tend to look like, how am I going to make it big in this business and do the right thing about climate change? And it's happening right here. Right where we all are. And I think sometimes those personal stories that we know the most about are the ones that we can tell the best. So it's a great starting point. And it's like, to conjure up, you were talking about Alex Honnold and, Mark Sinnott, and wrote the book, The Impossible Climb. Mark wrote his first book, his first big book, not guidebook, about something he knew intimately, and that helped him a lot. And then part of that book, half of it really, was his own story, and it's beautiful. And so I think that's, then you get to venture forth, and you don't need, 20 suitcases of equipment to do it. You don't even need a really expensive camera. Heck, you've shot some beautiful things on your iPhone. for that gorgeous things on your iPhone. And so, yeah, perhaps maybe that's it. Maybe we look too, some of us look too far off in the distance for the great thing that's going to bring us to the chosen land.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think community-focused things, like trying to get involved there is pretty important from like food perspective, from travel perspective. It's not easy, but that climate change is the biggest thing to tackle, and it's bigger than climbing. And if we can use climbing and all these things that people pay attention to be a gateway to create more understanding of all this other stuff, then that's great.
Right. Awesome. Well, thank you. I don't want to keep you for too long. Actually, you invited me into your house, and I'm truly honored. We spent 2 months together 2 years ago, and we now occasionally get to text and chat on the phone, and I always look forward to that. To actually see you virtually is beautiful, and I look forward to once we all get everybody's vaccinated, I'll come on out. Maybe Sinnott and I will get in the car and take a road trip when you open up your Expedition Studios. And yeah, keep us posted. And the good to go, thing is something that I hope people who are watching, who live this kind of lifestyle, will truly look into. It's worth it. It's easy food, good, healthy carbohydrates, low salt, and tasty as hell. It's not boring camp food that, you know, it's the real deal. And so I'm thankful to them for helping make me feel good on Mount Everest and camping trips. And, so to you as well, thank you for your creativity, your love, your true passion to try to inspire people. And that's the beauty of Renan and Taylor, your incredibly talented wife, and inspiring others to take action and not just sit back and think all is lost.
Awesome. Well said, Tom. There's still pretty heavy questions coming in.
Yeah, you want to answer? I'll stick around. Oh, man.
Have you ever had feedback that made you realize the impact your film had? I'm sure you've had lots of feedback.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. Sometimes like people who watch films that have like dedicated their lives to issues because of it. That feels like real impact. Lately we've been, every film kind of has its nonprofit related to it, and GoFundMe, like for Vladimir, Russian marine mammal biologist, with Taylor's dad, with an impact on Winford's life, who just passed away from Ashes to Ashes film. It's hard to say like the true impact there, but sharing his story before he passed, and hopefully, like he says, you can't change the world, but put a dent in it. It's a tricky way to go, but
indeed.
Anyways, we'll have to continue this thing again. Maybe we can have another one of these little chats and realize like how many good questions would come out of it. So thanks everybody for tuning in.
Thank you to the Wood Brothers for the use of their song Happiness Jones for the theme song here on the HQ. If you like this episode or any of the HQ, would you please click subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and give me a rating. I'd love 5 stars and a review. It goes a long way in letting more people know about this podcast.
For more on Renan Ozturk, check out his artwork. It's out of this world, as is his photography. His website is a phantasmagora of visual and spiritual storytelling. Modern Renaissance man, you will see that right there on renanozturk.com. For more on Good to Go Foods, go to goodtogo.com. Between the two and the go is a dash. Real food, real adventure, the most delicious meals using clean ingredients to be enjoyed wherever your adventures take you, better than a candy bar. Well, you know, I mean, in the old days when we didn't know any better, candy bars were pretty good. But these guys have done some damn good vegan, gluten-free, handmade options. And they're right across the way in Maine, not too far. So check them out. My friends, thank you for visiting the Happiness Quotient. I will see you all real soon. Oh.